Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to transform a good idea for a story into a finished novel or full-length work of nonfiction? As challenging as it can be to get a book into print, the real hurdle for many would-be authors is finding the will to stick with the writing process from conception to completion, expanding, editing, and polishing along the way to ensure others will be drawn to read this thing that is so dear to the writer's heart. And while much of the writing process will forever be a fairly solitary endeavor, my guests today believe there are great benefits to getting instruction and encouragement along the way. J. Suzanne Frank is director of the SMU creative writing program, The Writer's Path, and author of the upcoming novel, Laws of Migration. Daniel J. Hale is a former student participant in The Writer's Path who now teaches creative writing for the program, and he is the Agatha Award-winning co-author of the Zeke Armstrong Mystery Series for young readers. Kay Honeyman is another alumnus of The Writer's Path. She is an English teacher at Highland Park Middle School, and her debut novel, The Fire Horse Girl, is set to be released next month. In the interest of full disclosure, we do want to point out that SMU is a sponsor of this program. And now on to welcoming all of you to Think. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
So we think, as I mentioned, that writing has to be done in isolation, in a garret somewhere, maybe over a candle. What changes when the process involves other people?
I think for me, it changes what you can learn from the process. Instead of just learning what you take in, you get to watch other people and their paths as well. So you can take in all of their learning and then apply it to your own writing. And that has helped me a lot.
Is there any like anxiety if someone else is ahead of where you are? Or do you worry about that?
Yes, there is a lot of anxiety along with writing in general. There's a lot of comfort in that everyone goes in, they rise and they fall in that anxiety. And so you see your fellow writers come in one week and they're in the depths of a really difficult moment of their novel. And that could be you 2 weeks from then. Mm-hmm. So you see them go into that process, but you also see them come out of that process.
What does it take as instructors when someone is in a bad place to sort of say, you're gonna get past this and sort of give them the encouragement? Because I would think there are as many started and unfinished novels as there are finished and unpublished novels, maybe more.
I would say that the benefit of being in a group is that no matter where you are, somebody else has been there before. And as an instructor, because we're all published novelists, we have gone through that. We will go through that. It's part of a process. And we understand that it's repetitive. And as many books as you want to write, every time you sit down to write a book, you're writing your first book. Mm-hmm. So I think that helps that we have faith in the process and we understand that, you know, it's going to feel better tomorrow or it's going to feel worse, but it's going to change. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if you stick with it, the work will pay off.
One of the things I'll always remember is we spoke to the novelist Wally Lamb a few years ago, and he said, every time I finish a book, I think, okay, now I know how to do this. And then I go to start the next one, and I think, I have no idea what I'm doing, which is so humble for him to sort of admit that. And yet it makes sense that it's a brand new project. It feels like a different thing.
And you're also in a different place. Mm-hmm. So we have students who have gone through the program, you know, all the way through to New York and then come back with another book. And they'll be like, wow, I didn't know that you taught this. And it's like, it's exactly what we said last time. It's just you only have capacity to hear a certain amount at one time. Mm-hmm. And so there's benefits to every class. Mm-hmm.
What about for you, Dan? I know that you, two of your novels have been collaborations. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, they have.
How does that differ from the process of sort of working on your own, but working with a group of other writers on their own projects?
It's a strange hybrid mm-hmm. between being a lone wolf, working on your novel by yourself, and then perhaps, say, being in a writer's group. Because what it is, you're getting instant feedback when you're working. I work with my nephew. And when you're working with someone to whom you're very close, you find that it gives you confidence in what you're doing because you know, okay, if he doesn't think this is stupid, we're okay. We can go forward from this point on without having to go back later and go, oh, my goodness, that was stupid. So.
What about competitiveness? I mean, is there a sense that is there always that one person in the class that is sort of difficult to communicate with? No?
Not really.
Everyone's shaking their heads.
No, not really. You find that you hear about that, and I'm assuming people see movies and they see the cutthroat authors who are at each other's necks at all time. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that at all, and I've been out in the world. I've served as the executive vice president of Mystery Writers of America in 2007, so I got to know a lot of authors, a lot of big name authors at that point. They're all the nicest people you can imagine.
Hmm. So, what is it that it took for each of you? Have you all been writing from the time you were kids and knew that this was something that you would do, or was there a point where you said, "I really have to complete a novel and get on with it"?
I think I was not writing since I was a kid. I was reading since I was a kid, and mm-hmm. I've always been a big reader. And so I've always loved storytelling and loved any form that a story takes. But for me, as a teacher, I was very curious about the writing process and the reality of it versus what it looked like in the classroom. And so this was a great opportunity for me to step into what writing really meant and what the headspace was for taking something from an idea to a finished product.
Mm-hmm. How do you get beyond thinking, okay, I have a great idea, I'm starting, and then do you hit a wall? Or occasionally do you hit a wall and think, oh, what was I thinking? This is the dumbest idea ever, or this is not going to work. And what do you do at that point? Is there a step-by-step way to get past it?
Actually, I think so. In my view, and this is actually what we teach in the program, is know where you're going mm-hmm. before you get started. So if you know where you're going, if you have structure to what you're going to do before you get started, it's pretty rare that you run into those walls that are absolutely impassable.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the structure, because I've had the privilege of speaking with a lot of authors on this program, and some will tell you, novelists, some will say, I always put together an outline. I always go this way. You know, John Irving says I start with the last page. Other people, you know, have different ways of doing it. With a program like The Writer's Path, you obviously want to embrace a certain strategy that is sort of universal and yet recognize that people work in different ways.
I think the method that we, if you were going to use the word method, that we use to teach is the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. It's the monomyth. It's what the form that the very first story ever written by humanity that we've discovered so far anyway has taken. And it's also the form of the latest blockbuster. So there's a lot that seems within the human spirit to resonate with that form. And it basically says that, you know, powerful things change people in powerful ways. And that's, you know, that's the summary of it. And most people, as they're writing a book, are looking at something that happens that changes their character. And just as a writer, you know, the process is going to change you heroically. I think that's what we teach more than anything else, is that your character is in change, your story is in change, and who they were at the beginning, a mere mortal, if you will, at the end, they come out some kind of hero. And whether that's a tragic hero or a triumphant hero or a dead hero, there's a bunch of different kinds of heroes. But everybody is changed by those powerful things.
I think the structure of the classes, too, is important when you're talking about how they structure the story. And they start with the hero's journey, but then they layer on more and more specifics as you go through the different classes in the program. So you start with this very broad outline of the hero's journey. You layer some more specifics on in the next class, and then you start writing chapters. And you're constantly bringing that in and letting people look at it, see your work, and adding more richness and detail to your story.
I was interested, one of the classes that's mentioned in the syllabus talks about regular deadlines. And as a person, mm-hmm. I've had a deadline my entire adult life, and I think I sought this work because I would never get anything done unless I had to have my, you know, myself in a chair at a certain time. How helpful is a set of regular deadlines, even if you're paying for the class yourself and it's really only you you're accountable to? What is it about that? Does it change people's mindset?
Definitely. There's two deadlines that you're working towards in the classes. As someone who's been through the program would know, you're working for weekly deadlines. You're working for, you know, 6 to 12 week deadline so that you can take the next class, and you're working on a 1 to 2 year deadline so that you can have the New York experience. So those sets of deadlines really get you to where you want to be in the time frame that's reasonable, so that you're not just giving up and start putting it aside and saying, well, this isn't feasible. Because it's not the whole book that you have to write. It's just those 10 pages for the next week.
So talk a little bit about the New York experience. For people who are not familiar with the Writer's Path, one of the things that people who go through the course here in North Texas can do is apply to be part of this New York experience. How is that structured, and how is it different from what takes place with the classes on the campus?
The New York program, the New York seminar, is basically the apex of our program. So after you've gone through the classes, and there was about 9 of them, and they're 5 to 6 weeks apiece, so 15 hours, and write a book that is worthy of the world stage, you can gain an opportunity to go to New York and sit down with editors and agents who have read your synopsis in your first 15 pages and get feedback from them and begin building those relationships within the publishing world. It is an incredible opportunity, and it has changed quite a few people's lives, being able to have that experience and make those connections. I'm one of them.
One of a kind, don't you think? I've never heard of any other any experience like that.
Especially for a non-credit, non-degree granting program. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, the three of us have, by the way, been through the New York seminar. So,
is it exciting and also terrifying? I mean, when you step on that plane, do you think this? Maybe it's not make or break, but maybe it feels that way.
It does feel that way, yes, I would say. But it's also, when you get there and when you get to New York and you start to meet people, it's very comforting because you realize that you had this illusion of they were these amazing people that you would never meet, and they, you know, with godlike powers, and they are just and you learn that they're just regular people who are really hoping that your book is as good as you hope it is, because that will serve them as well.
So what does it take when you are sitting with publishers and people like that to sort of pitch the book? What is that part of what you're teaching students and part of what you were taught to present this idea that you have? I mean, obviously the work has to stand for itself, but what do you say?
Actually, I have my students prepare a 15-word pitch for their novels before.
Wait, 15 words?
15 words, yes.
Wow, that's worse
popular
than Twitter.
Yeah.
Just because if they're able to do that, if someone, say, in an airport or sitting next to them on an airplane happens to be an agent or happens to be an editor, if they say, "What is your book about?" they can give a very short, succinct, precise answer, which hopefully will lead to more questions, which hopefully will lead to someone saying, "Please send me your manuscript."
And another thing that does is it forces the student to really, really understand what their book is about. What is it that they are trying to write about? And we start training them on working on their pitch pretty much as soon as they come into class, so that they're constantly refining what am I really writing about versus what I think I might be writing about, because oftentimes that's not the same thing.
We are talking about the writing process with three people from The Writer's Path, which is a program at SMU. J. Suzanne Frank is director of the program. Daniel J. Hale is a creative writing instructor. And Kay Honeyman is an alumnus of The Writer's Path. Also, all three are published novelists. If you've got a question or a comment or want to talk about possibly getting your work published or what it would take to get it written, give us a call. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Investing in your education can pay big dividends. SMU Certificate Program and Financial Planning could help. You can earn a CFP certificate at SMU starting in January. Details online at cfp.smu.edu.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are all associated with the SMU Creative Writing Program, The Writer's Path. J. Suzanne Frank is director, and she is also author of the upcoming novel Laws of Migration. Daniel J. Hale is a creative writing instructor with The Writer's Path and a former student with the program. He's also the Agatha Award-winning co-author of the Zeke Armstrong Mystery Series for Young Readers, among other publications. And Kay Honeyman is an alumnus of The Writer's Path and works as an English teacher at Highland Park Middle School. Her new novel, The Fire Horse Girl, will be released next month. And I should say that is her debut novel. So congratulations
on
that.
Thank
you. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. I wonder at this point if you three are no longer surprised by the people who show up at these classes that you think, I would not have pegged you for someone with a novel that is yearning to be released.
You know, at first I had that reaction when I first started teaching in the program, which is 7-8 years now, I guess. Mm-hmm. These days, hardly anything surprises me. And just because everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fun, and the surprising part is the stories they have to tell. I think when I was in class, it was always fun to see all the different stories that people brought to my classes.
And we see people in waves as well. Like just recently, we've had a lot of engineers and a lot of people from the finance world who are coming in to write these fantastical novels. And I'm kind of like, what is the combination there? What shifted? But yes, it's amazing that basically everybody has a story. It's just, do they have, you know, all the components to put it on the page?
Are there students for whom the goal really is just getting this thing completed as opposed to having it published?
Think so. I think there's something cathartic about putting a story on a page. And I think the program pushes you so that you do have those bigger dreams. But I think it's satisfying just to tell your story to some degree.
And I've had a lot of students who have gone through the classes specifically to finish a novel, not necessarily to even have it published.
Mm-hmm. Just to know that they've done this thing.
Yes.
Yeah. These days, of course, there are more opportunities than ever for people to self-publish with ebooks. What are the kind of pros and cons of that approach?
Dan Hale knows the answers to this.
Go, Dan.
All right, I'll give it a try. E-publishing is fine, and I know a lot of people who do it. A lot of my friends who are professionally published already have also tried e-publishing, self-publishing. They've done that. One of the problems you'll always have is when you're e-publishing or self-publishing these days, you find yourself in a large sea of people who are also self-publishing. Mm-hmm. Traditional publishing, in other words, professional publishing, a.k.a. New York-based publishing, which is not as New York-based now as it once was, they're gatekeepers in a lot of ways. And at the same time, they also work as filters. So people who are looking for a good book to read might want to go to look through what a publisher has published to see that something's been selected from that great sea of all the manuscripts that are out there floating around.
I'm totally guilty of that, and I've felt bad before that I might be missing out on discovering something new. But if I have time to read, as much as I love getting something, say, for free or for 99 cents if I download it, you don't know if it's going to be worth the investment of time. Mm-hmm. But then every once in a while you hear about a novel that started that way. Is that how Shades of Grey? I'm not calling that great literature, but it's certainly done very well.
But it did. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And one thing I think you find, whether you're talking professional publishing or self-publishing, the cream is going to rise to the top.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Ray in Dallas. Hi, Ray.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if the process for publishing a children's novel, or children's book, rather, not a novel, would be the same as for publishing a full-length novel for teens or adults. I'll take my answer offline.
So you're talking, Ray, about when you say a children's book, like something illustrated that would be for younger readers?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
A picture book, which is, I believe, what he's referring to, is a very different process with different contacts and a different relationship between the author, the illustrator, the publisher. And that is not something that we have the expertise in educating people about. Mm-hmm. So there is the Society for Kay's nodding. Hopefully she can remember it.
Society for Children's Writers and Illustrators. I believe it has several
letters.
And
there's a B in there, too.
Skibbe. Yes, but, yes, yeah. Thank you. SBCWI. And they have local groups that go through that process and critique groups as well. And I've been in those critique groups. They're wonderful for young adult and for children's books. Yeah.
I can tell you that for middle grade chapter books, for young adult, and then for adult, the process is pretty much the same, and that is what we cover. I've written middle grade. Kay writes YA, mm-hmm. and Suzanne has written pretty much everything. And I can tell you the process is the same. The structure is the same. The books may be shorter. The words may be smaller, but writing a good book is writing a good book is writing a good book. Mm-hmm.
What about the idea that you are writing for younger readers? Are there stories that come in that people start off imagining are for an adult audience that through the process of the class they say, okay, this might work better if you geared it toward, you know, high school freshmen or something like that?
I think audience is one of the hardest things to pinpoint with your own story, and it does help to bounce it off of instructors and see who they view as reading the story. I think you often walk into class with a concept of what your book will be, and part of the process is being guided towards the reality and the best outlet for that book.
I think it's all a refining process. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to what you think you're going to write is maybe not necessarily what turns up on the page. Mm-hmm. And in that process, you may go, oh, I thought this was for adults, but now I realize I'm writing for 16-year-olds.
How does the program teach the sort of balance between being true to what your vision was on the day you walked in or on the day that you were, you know, in the shower and had this fantastic idea, and what other people, editors, experts, the market sort of feel would improve the work?
This is something I think we're pretty adamant about, is the student holding on to the vision and to the passion and to the love of what they fell in love with and what was the genesis for this creation process. And then what we try to do as instructors, what we try to do in the whole course of the program, is to refine and perfect that vision. And everything is a stepping stone. So the idea that you walk in with may not be the idea that you come out with, but at the same time, part of the magic of writing, and I believe this and all of my students will tell you they've heard it endless times, is that the story that you are writing is already in your head, mm-hmm. as it is going to be. And your process is to get between what you think it is and what actually it should be. And that's books, that's classes, that's practice. That may be whole drafts that get thrown away.
It's like David in the block of marble.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I remember exercises that we did with Suzanne in our class where we wrote, I still have one, where we wrote the core of our story, and I was just looking at it. And it is, the events aren't the same and the names aren't the same, but the emotions are on that page. And that was before I had written a single chapter of the book, but that core stayed with the book the entire time, and that is because of the teaching that they do and how they train you to hold on to it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Ron in Louisville. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to pick your brain about a story that I've written. It's a book, and it's about a true story. When it's like 40 years old. I wrote it once when I first got out of the Navy, and then I've rewritten it in the last year to try to add to it to use some more emotional content. But the thing that I think that makes this book interesting is it's a unique situation because I actually ended up going into Vietnam in blue pajamas. I went onto the battlefield with a platoon of Marines, and I was in pajamas and flip-flops, which is a bizarre story in itself. But the whole point of the novel is it's kind of a human interest coming-of-age story, loss of innocence. So it's told with humor, and now that I've rewritten it, it has what I consider some more adult insights. So I was just wondering if what you would suggest would be the next step to try to take that from the manuscript that I have now to trying to get it published.
We actually are have just opened our revision class as an opportunity for people in the community to who have written a book to apply for the class, and if they are accepted, to take advantage of our very stringent, very intense, very hard revision process and try and get that project ready for a world stage. So I would suggest you go to our website, smu.edu/creative-writing, and send me an email and we'll talk.
How much of the writing day or the hours that you would devote in a day to writing are spent sort of fingers on keyboard, and how much of that time that you were in your office or wherever you work is spent thinking?
I would say that one of the things that we really work at again in our process is to do a lot of pre-writing, mm-hmm. whether you want to call that, you know, notes or an outline or, you know, giant structures on your walls, whatever, so that you, the time that you do have to sit down at the keyboard, you can actually produce. Mm-hmm. Our students are, for the most part, working adults, family adults. Nobody has time. But if you can know what your subconscious should be working on during the course of a day, then when you sit down for that hour and a half, then you're producing words instead of staring at the keyboard.
When you are, the three of you, and maybe the answer is different for each of you, do you get into that, like, Chicks and Me, Holly sense of flow, and you can't stand to be interrupted? I mean, is it like, if it's an hour and a half, do you really feel like that goes by in 5 minutes?
It does. In fact, I turn off everything, turn off the internet, turn off the phone, everything, and I will sit there and I'll write until my little timer goes off that tells me I need to be at the next place. Mm-hmm. And it does. When you're in that world and you're fully immersed in that world, there's nothing else quite like it, and time ceases to exist.
I think it's different for everyone, like you said, and I'm less trained and experienced than they are, but I would consider myself more of a reviser than a writer. The writing of the draft is very challenging for me, and just getting those ideas down the first time. And so I end up spending a lot of time going back and revisiting and revising, which works for me, but it's not as much of a lost in it sense. More of a wandering in it sense. So that's okay.
The writer's path.
Yes. It's meanders.
Yes, it does.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here from Elizabeth who says, seems there are a lot of wannabe authors out there, including myself. How do you handle those who sign on for the program but may really be self-deluded about their ability and talent? Are you candid up front if someone really just shouldn't pursue writing?
Everybody can write a book. Mm-hmm. Everybody can.
That's why we teach in this program.
Yeah.
Why don't we all believe that we can all write a book?
It's hard work, I would say. So I think everybody can write a book. I'm not sure that once you get into it, everyone wants to invest the amount that it takes to invest in producing a book. And it might be easier for some people, but I haven't seen a lot. I think most people have to really pour their heart and soul into it. So wanting to write a book and wanting to do that are two different things.
It's almost like playing a musical instrument. I see someone mm-hmm. and say, I wish I could play the piano. And right. then there's the old, well, if you really wished it, you would have been practicing for the past 30 years.
And so true.
Right.
And that's exactly true. And I think it's a little bit trickier with writing because people think, oh, well, you know, I use English every
yes.
day. I write emails all the time. And structuring a story and creating a sympathetic character and all the rest of it is
right.
very different than tweeting. Mm-hmm. Nothing personal against anybody who tweets their stories, but
do you have to give yourself permission to not necessarily on the first time out of the gate write the great American novel in order to proceed?
I can tell you this. I write after I plan. I actually do planning. I sketch out the novel. I use actually a series of steps that I use, and I go through, and I've got the novel sketched out before I start. I also use a timeline, and so I have a timeline set before I start. But once I start, I go through as fast as I possibly can, and it's ridiculous. The amount of words that I repeat over and over and over again or whatever just to get through. My style is to write through as quickly as possible and then come back and do a lot of that, the polishing, well, just the I guess you'd say the polishing, mm-hmm. Afterwards. So for me, getting through the whole thing as quickly as possible is important.
Kay, I think I read somewhere that you, during the process at some point, gave your book to your students.
I did give a book to one of my students, but I do share the process with them, mm-hmm. and that may be so. Because it's a messy process, and I think it's important for them to know, especially as English students who tend to write, turn in, get a grade, that it's much more than that, and that there is the writing. If you want to put something good down on paper, you can probably just write it, and a lot of my kids can. If you want to say something really great and really valuable and really meaningful, you have to dig in, and you've got to really look at how you're – not just what you're saying, but how you're saying it. And I want them to know that we make mistakes, and that's why we look over things again, and that's why we re-envision, that's why we take in critique. So I'm trying to get better and better at sharing it, but, you know, it can be intimidating to put up on – the screen what my original thoughts and writing were and then show what my editor said about it or mm-hmm. several editors and then struggle with fixing it in yeah. front of them. So, but I think I hope it does them a lot of good.
I wonder how deliberately the program tries to expose students within it to the idea that their work will be criticized, that it will sting sometimes, even if it's really constructive. And whether that's something, it seems like the longer you work in solitude, the more fragile you might feel about showing this thing to someone else.
And I think that's one of the benefits of us starting with Creative Writing Foundation, mm-hmm. which everybody, no matter what their background is, no matter what their experience is, they join that class and become a cohort mm-hmm. and move forward together. So there's less ego involved.
We're speaking this hour with J. Suzanne Frank, who is director of the SMU creative program, The Writer's Path. Daniel J. Hale is here as well. He is an instructor with the program, and Kay Honeyman is an alumnus. All three are published novelists, and we'll resume our conversation about writing in a few minutes. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Investing in your education can pay big dividends. SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning could help. You can earn a CFP certificate at SMU starting in January. Details online at cfp.smu.edu.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are all representatives of SMU's creative writing program, The Writer's Path, which you can learn about online. They are J. Suzanne Frank, director, and Daniel J. Hale, who is a creative writing instructor, and Kay Honeyman, who is an alumnus. They are also all three published novelists. If you would like to find more information, you can check out the Think page of KERA.org. If you want to be part of the conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. I am curious to know how important it is to pay attention to what is selling right now.
Not at all.
Not at all. Really?
Not
why?
At all. And I'll tell you why. Because everybody, as I mentioned, everyone has a story to tell. The thing is, only you can tell that story in your own voice. If you try to write for the market, it's almost always going to result in failure. If you write the novel that you need to read that doesn't exist yet, that's exactly what you need to do. A very dear friend of mine wrote that novel, and she struggled with that novel. And I'm going to leave the name out just because. And after a couple of years, that novel sold. And then it turned into this phenomenon. But she wrote the novel that she had to read.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Gus in Granbury. Hi, Gus.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I been a storyteller all my life, and I had a story to tell, but, you know, I just started writing one day, and of course, my kids would encourage me to write because I used to tell them stories all the time. And the thing that affected my story is the fact that I worked for 32 years protecting the environment, and I was exposed to so many calamities by industry and by other folks, you know, and seeing kids and not being able to really tell them what was going on. I would get to my motel room in the afternoons and I would tear up sometimes because I felt so bad. So I made a science fiction story, kind of like a missionary, you know. My story is based on my sites that I was involved with,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the sites that changed the characters and what. And so I wrote my first book. Actually, I'm in the fifth. It's like an epic. I've been doing that for a long time. And it's kind of like eating, you know. I have to do this, uh-huh. and I do it in the morning. I just have to do it. I love to do that. And now my problem is my family. They bugging me to do something to publish it, and they came up with the idea of, why don't you get a blog and send 10, 15 pages and see if you get any bites. So that's...
Thanks so much for your call, Gus. Do you have a lot of writers that sort of start with blogging and, or particularly nonfiction maybe, and translate that?
That has not been our personal experience. Mm-hmm. I don't believe I know stories in the industry where that has happened, but that hasn't happened, I think, for any of our specific students.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like what you're saying, and I know we're talking about producing art here, but people say don't buy a piece of art because you think it's going to appreciate in value or because it's, you know, an investment. You have to do it because you love it. And it sounds like mm-hmm. the writing has to be because you love it rather than you need a new, you know, Chevrolet or whatever.
It's much easier to just play the lottery.
That's true. Yes, you have to invest so much in it. You really need to love your story and love what you're doing. And I like what he said about he has to get up in the morning and he has to write. I think
like eating,
like eating. I think we can all relate to that, and that is the way that writing should feel.
So, how do you help writers? I'm curious about the people who say, I started this and I was telling it in the first person and it was, you know, sort of a journal of the narrative. And as it turned out, what started as a minor character is the main character and I'm telling the story in third person or something. What is the process for not only discovering in your own work what, you know, how the story needs to be told, but helping another person find their way to this?
I think that's probably one of our instructor's superpowers. Is to be able to listen to what the student says and look at what's on the page and ask the questions mm-hmm. to help them realize, you know, what my story would be better told from this other angle, mm-hmm. or I would be able to flesh it out more if it wasn't first person or whatever. And I think that's part of the benefit of having instructors who are also novelists, mm-hmm. who yeah. also face the page every day.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're almost doing this sort of therapist thing where you let them, you're asking directed questions, but you're letting them discover this rather than saying, what are you doing here? This is the wrong way to do it.
I don't think anybody can tell someone else that this is the wrong way to do it, or this is something that's not going to be popular, or this is something that shouldn't be written. Mm-hmm. We are not that authority. Our job is to facilitate the student to put what they love on the page. And probably our strongest directive would be love the work. That is the only guarantee in this entire process, is loving the work.
And they make you own what you put on the page. They're not going to tell you to do something so that you can look back two drafts later and say, well, what a mess. I mean, Suzanne and Dan are both very good at, you have to make this call. You have to make this decision. Here's something that you might consider, or a place where you need something. You decide what you need to put there.
We ask a lot of what if questions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How does it go working with students who may be on the right track? They may be very talented, but whose work, for whatever reason, really does not resonate for you as a reader?
Hmm. It doesn't really have to resonate for me.
Really?
No, because it's about them and it's about their passion. It's about what they want to do. And if they want to write a book about something that might not exactly hold interest for me, mm-hmm. I can still look at the work and I can see that it's good writing because, as I hate to repeat myself, but good writing is good writing.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch them in class because they are servants of the students. And it was really neat for me as a teacher of young people to see that this is how it works. You really coach and you support and you take in what the students say, but it's not what you think of with teaching when you're talking about writing. You're not just feeding them information. You're really trying to support and guide, but they're very much in the background, sort of kind of pushing from behind. They're not at the front leading.
So I wonder how this has affected the way you teach your eighth graders about writing, which is such a great age because they're sort of on the cusp of adulthood, but they're still kids.
Mm-hmm. It has affected it a lot. It's made me a much it's changed the process that I've taught, where I give them a lot more time and I give a lot of space between when we write, because I had that as a writer and you need it to gain perspective. And it's taught me to really mentor and coach instead of instruct and point out mistakes, that writing is really about trying to get the best version of what you're trying to say on the page, not about a correct. And I talk to my students a lot about that. It's not a right or wrong. It's what do you have and how can you make it better? And I think that changed, that is because of the program, because it's not, they don't look at anything and say, this is wrong. They just say, you know, how can we take this two steps forward? And then the next time they'll take it two more steps forward.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Philip in Denton. Hey, Philip.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, my question is, I was a music major for 3 years, and I could see that talent and, prodigies were very real, or at least I believe they were. But I'm an aspiring screenwriter, and I can see that it's a little bit different in that realm. How would you guys define or quantify talent in writing, and do you think prodigies are real?
Thanks for your call. There's a meaty question.
Well, it's a good question. And I will say this. Yes, there are people out there with innate talent. And sometimes I've seen some talent that is almost scary. The thing is, I'm going to quote Calvin Coolidge here. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence.
I have that on a plaque in my office, actually.
Nice. Very good. Yeah. And it's something I live by. You, no matter how much talent you have or feel that you don't have, if you don't put yourself in the chair, sit at the keyboard, and work on a consistent basis, you're never going to finish your novel.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do on the days when you know you need to do that and suddenly you remember you need to clean the kitchen and go for a run and wash the dog? Am I looking at three people who don't face those urges to do something easier?
Right. You got to be kidding.
Yeah. It's easier some days and it's harder other days. I mean, and sometimes you make yourself sit there and do what you need to do in front of the page. And sometimes you don't and you do it the next day and you make yourself sit there tomorrow. So
that's a very kind response.
So a lost day doesn't mean that you're off the wagon entirely and
I hope not.
Left without you.
I think it depends on what your process needs to be as a writer. One of the things that I discovered years ago that has led to me being efficient and consistent is that every day I sit down and I write for at least 20 minutes. And, you know, it's the practice called morning pages. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I'm always touching base with my story. Mm-hmm. So at least if I'm not going to sit down and write, you know, however many pages during the day, I am working on a problem. I'm thinking about a character. I always have part of my mind in this story.
That's true.
And for me, if I don't do the pages, then I don't have the words. But with the idea that writing is a muscle, you know, think of how quickly your muscles atrophy if you miss the gym for a couple of days. It's probably not too much different with writing.
Mm-hmm. I think the real challenge with writing is not the days that you don't do it, but the days that you do it and it results in a giant mess. And so that would be, those are the hard days for
those
me.
Those are the hard days. Yeah.
Well, let's take another question right now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Drin. I think it's Drin in Dallas. Hi, Drin.
Hi, it's Bren. Thank you. This is a wonderful program for all of us who have a book rattling around in our head.
Oh, good.
Two or three heads. I always find difficulty in finding the space in my mind and in my location, but I'm a better storyteller. I'm a good writer, I've been told, and I am without sounding immodest, but I find that now I would like to know what you think about the voice recognition software. It's like Dragon or using one of the recorders that journalists will use. I find that an easy way. Once I start speaking to somebody, they said, oh, you should write this. You should record it.
Hmm.
So what do you think of that method and then going back and cleaning it up or organizing it in a more readable format so it doesn't, it's not so wordy?
That's really interesting. Thanks for your call.
I'll take that one because I actually use Dragon and don't use it all the time. There are days when I just want my fingers to communicate to the keyboard what it is my mind is thinking. And there are other days when I want to stand up, walk around, and talk and let the words magically appear on the screen. And it works quite well. For me, at least, it works quite well. I recommend this to my students to at least give it a try if it's something that they feel they might be more comfortable with. And I agree also with the caller statement about go ahead and get it all down that way and then go back and edit later. When I'm editing, I have to be on the keyboard. I have to. But for writing rough drafts, I recommend it. It's always worth a try.
Do you have those laughable experiences where you meant to say one thing and what ends up on the page is my nephew eats paper napkins under the mountain on Wednesday?
not that much. It's actually pretty accurate. It's not quite like Siri. Siri's a little different. But my problem is sometimes I forget to tell the microphone to go to sleep and I'll be talking on the phone and I look at my manuscript and there's my entire conversation right there. So, yeah.
All right. So people can find out about the Writer's Path online and they can look at dates and signing up and things like that. Is there, though, a sort of a time period in which it has to be completed, or can students do a course or two every year? How does that shake out?
We are adult education. We understand that you have to work in order to pay for the adult education. It is a write-at-your-own-pace program. Mm-hmm. What usually happens is in that first class, people click together, and then they take the next series of classes. So that would be story, plot, and into chapters where they are structuring the story and learning who their characters are, and not doing writing but doing pre-writing and thinking and that kind of thing. And that's where they're sort of have become a cohort, have become allies for each other. And from that process, that point on, it's how quickly you write your book. I mean, that's really what it boils down to, and how much accountability you need for taking chapters or whatever the other courses are. So it is up to each person.
J. Suzanne Frank is director of the SMU Creative Writing Program, The Writer's Path, and author of the upcoming novel, Laws of Migration. Daniel J. Hale is a former student participant who now teaches creative writing for the program, and he is the author of the Zeke Armstrong Mystery Series for Young Readers, among other titles. Kay Honeyman is another alumnus of The Writer's Path. She's an English teacher at Highland Park Middle School, and her debut novel, The Fire Horse Girl, is set to be released next month. It's been wonderful having all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today's show was engineered by Alan Roberts. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is our senior producer. You can learn more about the show, find out about upcoming programs, and download the podcast free at kera.org/think. And we always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions emailed to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.